Welcome to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk. Here's your host, Jason Davis.
Happy Friday. Welcome to Soccer Morning here on WorldSoccerTalk.com. Very excited for a big weekend of soccer. Very excited for a big Soccer Morning program for you today. Plenty of room for your phone calls. In fact, we're going to get phone calls in, open up the lines, get your thoughts, concerns, questions, comments, queries. Give me another word that means something. All of that stuff's going to come up after the news this morning. I'm going to dive right into that. Then at 10:40 a.m. Eastern, Mr. Will Parchman from Top Drawer Soccer will join us. We're going to wide range with Will. We're going to go all over the place. We're going to talk U.S. Youth Internationals. We're going to talk LAFC. We're going to talk a little MLS. We'll talk Haji Wright going to the Cosmos. So many different stories that we can talk to Will Parchman about. And he's got his finger on the pulse of them all, which should be a good time on a Friday. I'm really, really, really jazzed up for this show. I don't know why. Maybe it's because, I don't know. There's a lot of things interesting me in the soccer world right now. It's not just the games themselves, but we're going to go over all of that. We're going to go over what the weekend looks like. I've pulled up our friend Jonathan Tannenwald's game to watch column at philly.com, which you should go read. So we can touch on some of the games he thinks are important. I've tossed in a couple games that I think are interesting to watch. By the way, Jonathan does not even mention NYFC's visit to PPL Park in his games to watch column. I feel like that's enough to get you banished from Philadelphia forever. Like, I feel like that's the kind of thing that, I mean, I know you, the Union, aren't good right now, but maybe you should highlight the local game a little bit. I mean, it is NYCFC coming in. And I wrote a column a couple days ago. I wrote a piece for ESPN FC, a little short hit, asking the question whether or not there's going to be a rivalry between NYCFC and the Philadelphia Union. I know Jim Curtin was in the press saying something like, they're from New York, it's a rivalry. Is it really? Is it going to be one? Do we have that lined up? A lot of things happening and the world of soccer ready to go. So write them down, jot them down so you don't forget them, and we'll get to the phones here in just a couple of minutes for you to jump in or with your comments. First up in the headlines, Eddie Johnson, American international, former Kansas City Wizard, former FC Dallas player, former Fulham player, current DC United player. Looks like his career may be coming to an end. A report by Stephen Goff of the Washington Post indicates that Eddie Johnson's heart condition, which was identified ahead of the season, it was identified towards the end of last year and then was properly assessed ahead of this season and has kept him out of soccer action totally in 2015, may end his career. He's 31 years old. It's too early for Eddie Johnson to be hanging him up. Let's just be honest about that. Broke into professional soccer at the age of 16, 19 goals in 63 U.S. men's national team appearances. I'm sure you remember some. I'm sure you can pick out a couple of big Eddie Johnson moments from his history as a U.S. men's national team player. I remember the 2007 Copa America, Eddie Johnson. It's a long time ago. 8 years ago, Eddie Johnson, a flash at forward. 90 MLS goals, if I have that correct. As I mentioned, started out in MLS, ended up in Europe. Fulham didn't work. He played at Aris briefly in Greece. I'm sure I'm missing clubs for Eddie Johnson. I did not pull up his full resume, but I did want to express that it is a sad moment when a player that young has to hang them up. And at the same time, if this is what's best for Eddie Johnson's health, clearly he needs to make that decision to decide to retire probably well before he would like to. Now, on the practical end of things for DC United, there are lawyers and the unions involved in trying to figure out how to get DC United some cap relief if Eddie Johnson is, in fact, done at the age of 31, which it appears that he will be. Diego Costa will miss the rest of Chelsea's games in April. That is per Jose Mourinho. That's a big loss, obviously, for Chelsea. Now, they've got enough of a gap at the top of the table. And they've got enough creators in that team, goal scorers, people who can step up, that you would think that they'll be fine. But Costa has been a monster when he's been healthy and playing well. And he needs to get back to that, obviously. I saw this at Fox Soccer this morning. It's rather interesting, the idea that Liverpool and Arsenal could swap players. Raheem Sterling, obviously going through that contract situation at Liverpool where he's been offered a lot of money and he has yet to sign a new deal. The notion here is that these two clubs could swap Raheem Sterling for Theo Walcott, which is just, come on. I'm looking at this is all the transfer roundup stuff, and I got a transfer thing that I want to bring up in a bit. But come on, I threw that in here because I'm a little light this morning. But when's the last time we saw players swapped like that in the English Premier League? Money's not changing hands. People aren't moving. Zlatan Ibrahimovic has gotten a 4-match ban for his outburst in the aftermath of that loss to Bordeaux. You remember that. We talked briefly about it with Jonathan Johnson on this show. So Ibra will miss 4 matches for PSG, who again is not only still alive in the Champions League and looking to make some serious noise in that competition, but also has to go chase down another Ligue 1 title, which has not come nearly as easily as you might expect considering the level of talent that they have. I don't know if you saw this. This was fascinating to me. A lot of talk about it among some soccer nerds. It's the UEFA decision to order a replay of the final moments of a U19 game in Europe between England and Norway. This is the under-19 women's teams were playing in a game that was a qualifier for the European Championship. Now, the English were given a penalty towards the very end of the match. There was encroachment into the area. And instead of awarding England a re-kick, having the player take the kick again, the referee gave Norway a free kick. UEFA deemed this to be the incorrect refereeing decision and had them play 5 days later, replay those final moments. So England put the penalty away, ended up drawing the match 2-2, and now that it sends them both through to the European Championship, if I'm not mistaken. But it's the more about the precedent that this sets. So you have a bad refereeing decision, and rather than sort of let it lie, which is the case in nearly every other circumstance, you bring the players back and you have them play it over again. Short of weather, I don't know that I've ever seen this happen before. All right, games to watch this weekend. Again, check out philly.com and John Tannenwald's piece on the games he's picked out. He's definitely got the Manchester Derby. I think we all do. At Old Trafford, Manchester United facing a City team that's been scuffling and going through quote-unquote crisis. We'll see how that goes for the Citizens against the Red Devils. Portland hosting Orlando City. That's obviously a vibrant atmosphere, a big away match for Portland. You'll get Kaká facing off against the Timbers there in the Pacific Northwest. DC United hosting the New York Red Bulls, one of MLS's best rivalries, if not the best rivalry in MLS, DC United facing the Red Bulls with the knowledge that Eddie Johnson is probably done officially. Red Bulls coming in probably with very few changes from the last time these two teams played. LA and Seattle is a big Western Conference clash. Now, again, it's early enough in the season that when you look up at the standings and you see LA Galaxy in eighth place and the Seattle Sounders in fifth place, you go, that doesn't sound right. We'll see if that lasts for much longer. But for the time being, this game is pretty crucial to both of these teams. FC Dallas and Colorado tonight. And the only question there is whether or not the Colorado Rapids are capable of scoring a goal. Do we know yet? Is it how much longer can the Rapids go without scoring a goal? Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines. You want to talk Eddie Johnson? How about this? Bring me your transfer rumor, and I will decide if it's legit or not. That's what I want to do today. It's a Friday. Will Parchman at 10:40. Don't go anywhere. Be right back. You're talking too loud.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we go, back on Soccer Morning. Phone lines open. New number, 646-832-3909. I think Alistair is ready to go. What's up, Alistair?
Hey, good morning. I have a nice little transfer rumor. How about Zoltan Ibrahimovic going to Manchester City?
Zlatan to I have not heard this one. This is new to me. Zlatan Ibrahimovic to Man City. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, I heard it from a soccer blogger suggesting that maybe, you know, Zoltan might be getting tired of PSG, and PSG, you know, might be getting a little tired of him. I think if he goes with to Manchester City, you add a nice little spark to the team.
I certainly think it's possible that PSG is a little tired of Zlatan. Zlatan's a little tired of France. Manchester City's a place that would make sense because they're the type of team that has the money to dump on Zlatan. Let's remember he's 33, approaching 34 this fall. I don't know that necessarily means he couldn't make a big move. It just means it may not be a long-term deal. I don't know what Zlatan wants to do. I think that I will put that one in the plausible range only because the match makes sense, whether or not it actually is happening. Go ahead.
I have one more thing, too. I can see it in the coming to the MLS playing for New York City FC, too, down the line.
Yeah, no, that's obviously there's been that news story about Zlatan going down to the going down and getting his U.S. visa, which, again, has been pointed out. You don't need a visa if you're only going to be here for a little bit on vacation. So maybe this means he's intending to stay longer. Well, that could be now. It could be 3 years from now. It could be just, you know what? I might as well get this done. I think that if Zlatan comes to MLS, which I'm still on board with, I think New York makes sense. I think LA. I mean, it's unfortunately for everybody else, and I'm sorry, Middle America. Zlatan Ibrahimovic is not going to end up in Columbus or Colorado or Dallas or he's just not, or Chicago for that matter.
No.
And that's unfair to those teams. But it's going to be New York. It's going to be
LA.
What'd you say?
You know, because it's a big market. Maybe Chicago because it's a big market.
No, that's the problem, Alistair, is that Chicago is a big town that doesn't get respected like a big town. It doesn't have that. It doesn't have the reputation abroad as a big city. When people think of the United States, they think L.A., New York, Miami. That's what they do. That's why he would end up there.
And one other thing, too, I think Eddie Johnson, I think, should be a first ballot Hall of Fame because he had a really good career, I think.
That's an interesting discussion, whether or not Eddie Johnson is a Hall of Famer. I don't think he's going to get in. It'll take some time before he's even on a ballot. Maybe sentiment will shift. But let's not forget that Eddie Johnson's taken a beating in terms of his reputation over the course of his career.
True.
He's been identified as a petulant player. He's obviously had some incidents in his personal life that have been high profile. And I'm not saying that should count, that should matter, but think about the voters for the Hall of Fame. Think about who makes up that that contingency and whether or not they would actually whether or not they would actually vote Eddie Johnson in.
All right, well, thank you.
No problem, man. Thanks for the call, Alistair. There you go. The phone lines are open, 646-832-3909. I am here to tell you whether that insane transfer rumor you've heard has any possibility of happening. I am the ultimate arbiter. I am deciding right now, I'm making this declaration, that I get to decide whether or not your transfer rumor is true or not, or false, or impossible, or ridiculous, or whatever. Just to give you some peace of mind. I know you know, if you had a magic eight ball, you wouldn't need me. Maybe you have one of those. Will Zlatan go to Man City? What does the eight ball even say anymore? I don't even know what a magic eight ball says anymore. The kids use magic eight balls? Am I dating myself already? Again? Am I doing that again? All right. 646-832-3909. Will Parchman at 1040. We're going to cover a lot of things with Will Parchman. I'm looking forward to that discussion. We'll be here until 11 o'clock today on a Friday. Get out a little early for you, a little early for us. Get your weekend started. Tell me what games, as always, tell me what games you're looking forward to this weekend. Does that Manchester Derby have any juice to it at all? I mean, it should. It's two top teams in the Premier League. It's two teams with plenty to play for, and yet you feel, with the way that Manchester City has fallen off, you kind of feel like it's not as big of a deal as it might otherwise be. I mean, it's huge in Manchester. I'm not going to deny that. You also have the NBC television crew taking their show to England. So all of the NBC names will be there on the ground in Manchester. NBC Roadshow rolls into Old Trafford for the 169th Manchester Derby. United and City are in third and fourth place in the Premier League, respectively, and are separated by just 1 point. Yaya Toure, Sergio Aguero, and City are reeling after a loss at Crystal Palace. That's part of it. Losing to Palace doesn't really set the stage, effectively ending their title hopes, but a clash with Wayne Rooney's Red Devils provides plenty of motivation. That is from, again, John Tannenwald's What to Watch column over at Philly.com. Mike wants to talk about the U.S. Open Cup pairings. I do not have those in front of me right now. I apologize for that. I know we've got a U.S. Open Cup draw. We need to get Josh Akla back on this show from the cup.us to go over this year's U.S. Open Cup tournament. I'm seeing stories out there and blog posts and the like and stuff. The headlines are that the U.S. Open Cup is a sleeping giant of American soccer. That may be true. But the question you always have with any sleeping giant, and it's true, it's been true of the United States as a soccer country. If you ever hear people talk about rugby, they'll say the U.S. is a sleeping giant. They'll say certain things are sleeping giants in a sporting context. The problem with a sleeping giant is that there's no how-to book on waking them up. How do you wake up this sleeping giant? I know people want to simplistically say, if U.S. soccer invested more in the U.S. Open Cup, it could be huge. And I think that's a reasonable assumption to make. I just don't know how you create a market for that tournament. In terms of television, in terms of national footprint. How do you do that exactly? Who do you get on board? How much of a commitment would it take from one of the major sports networks to give the U.S. Open Cup its proper due? To give it its proper stage. Speaking of this, Guillermo's on the line, wants to talk U.S. Open Cup. Guillermo, what's up?
Hey, good morning, Jason. Everything good here, man. I'm really looking forward to this weekend's game between the Seoul, the Sonoma Seoul, and the new USL affiliate, the Burlington Dragons. I know this means nothing to you. These are tiny little teams out here in the West, but we need to put this on the map. I think you're right on with saying that it needs to be carried at, you know, it could be Versus or whatever it's called now. Right now it's NBC. There's a bunch of new specialized media venues.
Guillermo, look, I would love, you're making a logical leap. First of all, NBC has plenty of content. They have plenty of stuff to show, okay? They have auto racing, and they've got, you know, obviously news shows and plenty of Premier League soccer. NBC's got a lot of stuff. They do not have room to go showing Burlington versus the Seoul. I'm sorry. Now, you could find some other way to do this, I guess. And Trevor's like, okay, always thought U.S. soccer needed to bring in a marketing firm to reinvigorate it, get creative. Okay, I agree with that. Let's take a different approach. Let's make this, I'm sorry I'm going to sound old here, but let's make this tournament hipper. How do you do that exactly? Find a creative marketing firm. Maybe they can figure out a way to do that. But again, in terms of creating the television interest, I don't know where that is. I don't know how you do that.
You know, the way I've always thought it, and I think you're right, I think they do need to bring professionals in here that have the connections to give, you know, there's a bunch of new channels opening up, right? CBS, they all want to do their 24-hour sports coverage, right? There's a bunch of different ones that are exploding out there, and you should be one of these. But create a regional rivalry type of thing, okay, like the college folks have done for many, many years, right? Like small market teams need to be able to get, you know, fired up to go to Fresno from the Bay Area, right?
But you have to
go to Las Vegas and make those road trips happen for the local folks. That's what's kind of put it in the map.
Guillermo, first of all, I think you're being a little Pollyanna with the idea that there's some network out there that would pick this up. Even if you do CBS Sports Network, how many people have that and know where it is? So I'm just saying you're limiting the audience. If the U.S. Open Cup final, I think, is still on. Thanks for the call, Guillermo. I'm going to move on. The U.S. Open Cup final, I think, is still on Goal TV, right? They still have the rights. Is that right? Nobody gets Goal TV anymore, but that's a dedicated sports network. I mean, it's on TV. Now, if you want the entire tournament to be broadcast somehow, it's going to have to be the internet. That means investing in all of that technology to get the cameras out at the stadiums. And I just mean, even if it's a webcam situation, you still have to have somebody out there running those things. You have to have the proper internet connection to get it going. There's so much stuff to get involved with here. So I would love for this tournament to take a step forward. I am just not clear, and no one has laid out for me how to do that with those elements. I'm not saying it's not potential, and I admit that I'm not a marketing guru. If, as Trevor says, you bring in a firm and they find some way to make it more interesting, that's great. The other thing that Guillermo said before I get to Washington is that you need to create these regional rivalries and have these people excited to take the road trip to Vegas. The difference between that and, say, a college atmosphere is the colleges have a built-in fan base. Every single one of those 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds who go to that school has a vested interest in rooting for that team, whether it's basketball, soccer, baseball, whatever it might be. You have to create your own fans as a soccer club, even if you're USL. You have to create those fans. How do you do that exactly? Washington, what's up?
Hey, what's up, Jason? So I wanted to touch upon this topic as well. You had mentioned how do you wake up. I also believe the U.S. Open Cup is a sleeping giant, but unfortunately, I believe that the only way that you awaken that sleeping giant is by instituting pro rel in U.S. soccer. Because the reason why in other parts of the world, they, you know, you have fans that root, well, maybe it's not, it may not be the only reason, but definitely one of the reasons why you have fans that root and are so passionate for a third division team or a second division team is because if they do well, there's a chance of them making it to the first division.
Look, Washington, that is true to a certain extent. I will never deny that that's a part of rooting for a lower division team in a lot of the world. But you also have lots and lots of history that goes back 100 years. Their great grandfathers rooted for that team that's never been out of the fourth division, that's never been out of the third division. They're still going out to those games. They're still sitting in those rinky-dink stadiums with bleachers watching teams play on a muddy field. Because they have a tie to that team. They have roots. They have history. That, like I said, their great-grandfather went out to those games. That's not the case here, and you can't wish that
into
existence.
But history starts with day one. This is what I'm saying. If we keep saying, well, we can't do it because we have no history, we'll never have history.
No, I agree to a certain extent, but I think people want to rush. People think that the process can be accelerated somehow. That if you institute all these things, next thing you know, you'll have...
Oh, no. I'm not one of those people. You asked what it would take to awaken a sleeping giant. I'm not saying that if you institute pro rel tomorrow, U.S. Open Cup becomes a big thing tomorrow. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that's the first step. I really do believe it. And do I think that we're ready for that first step? No, I don't. Yeah. But I do think that that's the first step.
Yeah, no, you might be right, Washington. And here's Trevor dropping in again. He thinks that the David versus Goliath aspect is one of the strongest selling points, and everybody identifies that. Certainly later on in the tournament when you have a third division team facing MLS or vice or a fourth division team making it through and facing an NASL team or whatever the case may be. That's one of the stronger selling points. And you need to tie it to both local and national pride. Okay, so again, these concepts, these ideas that we all have on how to make this tournament relevant and interesting and bring out the passion, they're simple statements. Tie it to local pride. Okay, how do you do that? How do you do that? How do you get the local third, fourth division team, okay, how do you make it of interest to those local fans? Trevor said that's where marketing comes in. Absolutely, absolutely. And I guess what I'm doing here is I'm identifying where the marketing campaign needs to start. And obviously, not having a degree in marketing myself, I have no idea where to make that happen. 646-832-3909 is your phone number. Jump in on Twitter at Soccer Morning as well. I'll get that ramped up. We can talk U.S. Open Cup. We've got about 13 minutes until Will Parchman from Top Drawer Soccer joins us. We're going to do a lot of talk on LAFC and Haji Wright and maybe some NASL and U.S. Youth Team Development, all of those things with Will Parchman, who is fantastic. Mike on Twitter says Laton to the Cosmos is inevitable. All right, maybe it is, and I could see that happening. But I'm talking 5 years from now, maybe Laton to the New York Cosmos. Fox Sports got the U.S. Open Cup final this year. Okay, thank you, Mike. Appreciate that. So that's no longer a Gold TV issue. And apparently I did not have my Twitter feed working, and now I've got a billion tweets to try to catch up on. So there you go. Let me just go ahead and review some of this. Let's see. We've got James Sterrett. Part of me wishes that the rights would get rolled into the same package as the U.S. Men's National Team MLS rights. That look, the fact that U.S. Open Cup is its own thing, separate from everything else, and that U.S. soccer doesn't have a vested interest to push it alongside those elements is a problem. And I think James identifies a potential solution. But if you are the television network, that's inventory you might not want with teams that nobody has heard of that you have to force. I don't know. It's very difficult. Lawrence in Memphis, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Ah, man, we're talking U.S. Open Cup. It gets people riled up.
Yeah. Here's what I think. This won't make it necessarily a huge, like an awakened giant. But it's a series of steps in the right direction. Is what U.S. Soccer has done. They started it with the tournament last year. They offered what they felt was the best game of each round. They streamed it live on their website. Okay, so that's a step in the right direction. And then I know the CONCACAF Champions League has been on Fox Sports too. Now, obviously, only the most dedicated of fans are going to go over there and watch it. But surely Fox Sports 2 can put. Just another, each round can put a good game on there, whether it's a stadium atmosphere that they'll think will be the best, or it's a, sure. Like a New York Cosmos against the New York Red Bulls or what have you. So if you can, you know, if you can, it's, I mean, in today's day and age, it's all about the TV dollar. So if you can get, the one game streaming on the U.S. soccer website every round and the one game on Fox Sports 2 every round, that's, like I said, headed in the right direction. And obviously, some of these teams could do a lot better job of hyping up and advertising their U.S. Open Cup fixtures a lot better.
Yeah, and Lawrence, thanks for the call, man. It would certainly help if the MLS teams, all of them, or at least a majority of them, and certainly the high-profile ones, took the tournament seriously. When you've got Bruce Arena flat-out not caring, it doesn't help. Jonathan's calling on the hotline. Jonathan,
I went around your call screen.
You did. You're subverting the system. What's going on?
It's better audio quality, so it's better for the listener. I'm going to tweet out a column in a minute that I came across recently by a guy who's sort of writing on American soccer for the Telegraph in the UK named Bob Williams, that he reached out to me and Josh Hakla and a few other folks to ask about the U.S. Open Cup and why it doesn't get more interest. And the answer is twofold, in my opinion. One, and this is something that I've experienced firsthand working in that damn mainstream media that everybody wants to cover soccer more. You cannot manufacture demand.
No.
And, you know, the question that Bob asked in his column, and I think he asked it fairly intelligently, is which comes first, the club's interest generating fan interest or the fan interest making the clubs take it seriously? The answer is the clubs have to take it seriously first.
I would agree with that.
Because they're the ones who have the marketing engine and the ability to go out to people and say, yes, this matters and here's why. And when you get to – maybe it doesn't have a huge effect on the early rounds, but when you go out to people as the Philadelphia Union did last year and say, here is one game where we can win a championship in our home stadium. That's where it starts.
Yeah. You know, obviously we've got a history of the Sounders taking it seriously. As you said, the Union being able to try to win a title in their home stadium. DC United, you know, sort of their trophy collection. They love adding to it. Any U.S. Open Cup victories are a part of that. But I guess... I mean, I don't know, Jonathan, if we, I don't know if the foundation is there even. I mean, it seems like
the foundation in general for MLS is not as big as a lot of people who are part of that foundation think it is.
Right.
You and I have said that many times over the years.
Absolutely.
And the previous caller asked, well, why doesn't Fox just televise the games? Well, is that going to come out of the caller's pocket?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Television is not cheap, you know, and Fox's entire operation is based on the West Coast. You want them to televise a Cosmos Red Bulls game? First of all, it better be at Red Bull Arena because you better make sure that Short Stadium has everything you want, television-wise, which it generally does. But, you know, you take any lower division stadium where a game might be played Are you dead certain that you can run a full TV broadcast out of some of these places? Because
you
can't.
Yeah. You know, and I think that people see what happens with the FA Cup, and they see these little stadiums, these 5,000-seat stadiums, 10,000-seat stadiums, and they see these little clubs taking on Liverpool or Manchester United or whoever. And they imagine that we could definitely do that here. And first of all, I don't know that the interest is there to fill up those little stadiums. I don't think the infrastructure is there. And, you know, luckily for English football fans and for the people running those broadcasts, it's what? It's a two-hour train ride to the local stadium. It's not a flight across the country lugging equipment. It's, again, these things are interesting to consider. I mean, we had a couple of years ago, Cal FC generates enough interest to force some extra broadcasts. But generally that doesn't, and again, that's the interest, that's the demand presaging the actual broadcast, John.
And the people don't see, you know, they see what the cameras are broadcasting. They don't see all the temporary scaffolding the cameras are built on top of.
Yeah, look, and James is on Twitter saying, hey, they could market it. They could try marketing it at all. And again, that's what Trevor has been identifying here as part of the problem, John, is that I think a lot of people, before we even get to the idea of whether or not TV could have TV could be a better home for the U.S. Open Cup, you have that notion that U.S. soccer is not doing anything with it, or certainly not doing it enough. Doing enough with it. Is that your opinion?
I generally agree with that. But again, and look, would I like to see the, of course I'd like to see the coin flips web stream. And I've been a fan of the Open Cup for a really long time. Going back, probably a good 10 years or so. But Lauren's just, tweeted at me. I'm asking one game per round, and ESPN does games in Rochester. Well, yes, Rochester is a nice stadium, but it's you cannot force the television networks to do something that they don't think there's going to be some form of return on investment.
Sure. And we've already, again, sort of.
Because if it's your business, you'd make the same decision.
Absolutely. And as I identified, not only do we have people clamoring for the U.S. Open Cup to get better treatment and sort of putting the cart before the horse when it comes to television, MLS has been on that same track for a long time. And you could even argue, John, and I don't know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you could even argue that this $90 million total TV deal is an investment in the league ahead of any actual return for the TV networks. They're already putting their money on the table for that competition. Why are they also going to do it for U.S. Open Cup?
Well, they know the value of the U.S. Open Cup. The domestic television networks, they know that. But I don't think the general public's interest is there yet in the Open Cup. It's a great thing for the supporters. It's a great thing that has been nurtured and cultivated by the supporters over the years. Look, if I was living in San Francisco, I'd absolutely be at that game at Kezar Stadium on April 25th, whether or not I know anything about any of the teams involved. But that's – and you individually – and however many hundreds of people are talking about this with us would probably say the same. But it still doesn't constitute enough of a demographic caucus, whatever phrase you want to use, to make it worth the investment. Because again, if a lot of the listeners out there are saying, well, I do this and I do that, and it's not their money.
No. Appreciate the phone call, Jonathan. Got to move on. Thanks a lot. There goes Jonathan Tannenwald from Philly.com. I got a couple of minutes here. I'm going to try to jam you guys in. Robert out in L.A., what's up?
Hey, Jason. Good morning. Good
morning.
Hey, I wanted to talk about CCL real fast. That's okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, I just want to give you my opinion. I was watching the Montreal game, and I was just saying that I was watching the game through a Canadian feed, and I got more Montreal actually sent two post actual to the actual stadium in Costa Rica,
uh-huh.
And I got more insight from them, like, you know, what the fans were doing, and then, because I can't watch it when Kobe Jones and Fox does it, because they have no idea what they're talking
about.
So
you've lodged a complaint against Fox in the closet that they do these games from. Whoever sent people down, thanks for the call, Robert. I got to jump, I got to move on before we get to Will Parchman in a couple of minutes. Look, Fox Soccer putting that on is enough. I mean, we really can't get demanding and greedy here. A couple of tweets on the U.S. Open Cup before I get to Corey in New York. Jimmy Conrad jumping in. Being treated with more respect by the powers that be which will lead to proper media exposure, bigger bonus money, etc. So he's obviously got an idea of that people need to treat this competition with respect in order for us to get anywhere with it in terms of the U.S. Open Cup. Corey, what are your thoughts on this?
Hey, what's going on? I got to say, I really agree with Conrad, too. Respect from up above and the powers that be, that would definitely go a long way with respect. But to hop on what everyone's talking about in terms of TV, I really think I don't want to say it's a pipe dream, but it's really far away. We're going to need a more like seminal moment like 94 to really shift in TV coverage. Mm-hmm. But what I do think would be a great option for Open Cup would be kind of what the USL is doing with YouTube channels and digital streaming.
Absolutely.
And it could really market to niche fans. And that's really how it's going to grow the base.
But, and again,
you know, people that have been fans since 94, mm-hmm. people that have been fans since 96 and growing the league, we've helped grow MLS. We're going to bring in and usher the new generation of fans. And I really think going online, streaming content, that's going to be a way.
I agree, Corey. And I think that if there is a place for U.S. soccer to put its money, it's number one in a marketing campaign, a dedicated firm who goes out there and tries to make this competition look cool for everybody who might be interested. And number two, put it into that infrastructure. Again, I said, you know, you need somebody going out there with the webcam, getting everything set up, make sure the internet stream is good enough. And you are going to run into some hiccups, but at least make the effort and try to put these games on where people can see them. And those have gotten better over the years. Thanks for the call, Corey. You need to put them all in one place, perhaps maybe to get people that interested. Let's take a break. When we come back, Will Parchman from Top Drawer Soccer will join us for a wide-ranging discussion. Don't go anywhere. Be right back.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we go. Joined now via Skype by Will Parchman of Top Drawer Soccer. Follow him on Twitter. It's just Will Parchman, correct? I have that right.
You nailed it.
It's Will Parchman. There's only one Will Parchman.
There's only one. There's not even a Will Dot Parchman out there. There's just one.
There's a billion Jason Davises, and it pains me. It pains me that my Twitter handle is so terrible, but you've got yours, and it's a great place for people to go and follow Will's work, which is always fantastic. Will, we could talk about a lot of things, you know, generally speaking, because of what the work you do at Top Drawer Soccer with Travis Clark and those guys. We talk a lot about development and youth development. We're going to get to a couple of those topics, but I think what's interesting here, first and foremost, and I've been tracking this on Twitter just like everybody else, is what LAFC is doing right now. They're a nascent club. They whether or not you want to view them as an existing club is, I guess, eye of the beholder stuff. They certainly don't have any players. They don't have a stadium site picked out. They don't even have official colors and a logo, and yet they're doing things out there that make it uncomfortable. Is that the right way to say this?
Yeah, it's funny too when you say what LAFC is doing on Twitter. I'm not 100% sure what that is exactly. They're kind of throwing stuff against the wall. I mean, they had a round table on Twitter. I think it was 2 days ago, and they disappeared for about 90 minutes. You could go back and look at this. This is all on Twitter, and they disappeared for about 90 minutes. So they start the round table and then they're gone. So there's a ton of questions and comments on Twitter completely unanswered. And then they come back. They say, "Okay, we're back. We're ready to answer your questions." And you're like, "Excuse me?" And then they don't answer almost any questions. They say, "You know, we can't answer that at this time. We have no information on that. We'll be able to answer that in like 2016 or something." And that's kind of been analogous to how they've run this club. But it's kind of a shadow club where there's no information. I wasn't aware of this, but they made it seem during this roundtable as if LAFC wasn't even a deadlock as their official team name. I think it probably will be, but they were soliciting advice for what their team name could be, which is utterly asinine to me that you would launch. You know, we know they haven't launched with colors or a crest. Neither of those things they have. But if they have branded themselves as LAFC and that does not end up being their team name, you know, it's kind of a new level for what are you doing?
You know, and I've been critical of NYFC and how NYCFC and how they've handled things. Certainly how they handled things leading up to the inaugural season. I thought things took too long. I thought they weren't really connecting to New York. They were bringing in Manchester City players and doing all of these weird marketing things, and it just didn't feel right. Whether or not you can be organic, it probably can't. It's going to be corporate, and that's the same thing for LAFC. And yet here they are making even worse mistakes in my personal opinion. And yet I think that there is this kind of desperate group of people who are ready to latch on to this quote unquote team, despite the fact that it doesn't have anything to tether to. Will, what's that about?
Yeah. Well, the fundamental difference, I should say, between LAFC and NYCFC is that LAFC doesn't have a soccer background. I think Mia Hamm is in the ownership group, and they've got a couple people who've dabbled as well. But NYCFC had this like iron backing of City Football Group, which owns 80% of that club. And, you know, they've got youth identification apparatus in the bank. They've got they're going to have loans in the bank. Jason Christ went to Manchester for however long in the off season and viewed how they did their front office. And, you know, they have all of these things that can help them. I mean, NYCFC is going to be fine no matter what. I mean, they didn't need to roll out a crest. You know, they could afford to wait until earlier this year to establish their academy just because they have all of these things already in the ground. I'm not sure what LAFC is waiting on, but for the next 2 years, the LA Galaxy are going to have the largest homegrown monopoly in the history of MLS. There's not another club in my opinion, the most fertile development ground in the country in Los Angeles. So, I mean, certainly there are other development academies there and you can get a great soccer education, in a number of places, but no other club offers that sort of youth to professional single pipeline. And that's enticing to a lot of people. And the Galaxy have a unique niche in that way. And nobody else can challenge that until at least 2017. And there's been even some talk that LAFC might be 2018, which was another question on Twitter that they so kindly did not answer.
And this is the thing. Like, if you're not going to have answers to any of these simple questions, I get the branding stuff may come later, especially if you're not launching your team for a couple of years, but to not know, if you don't know when you're launching and they don't know, because I think all of this is tied to the stadium, right? Well, they don't know if they're going to be able to get a stadium done for 2017 or 2018. Clearly the timeline is pretty short for 2017, but if you don't know those things, why have a Twitter presence that is only going to muddy the waters? And again, they're doing odd things, like whoever's manning it is watching things happen across the world. And when Nicholas Bettner scores a hat trick against the U.S., he's throwing out things about Nicholas Bettner being a DP signing for LAFC. And I don't understand what that thinking. It's so confusing and convoluted. And it's almost like, I don't know. I mean, obviously our friend Maxi Rodriguez is all over this on Twitter, and that's where I'm getting some of this. But a lot of it is, It's like if you plopped somebody down in front of a laptop and said, "Here, man this Twitter account and watch soccer and just tweet whatever you feel is soccer related with no coherent strategy whatsoever."
And it would almost make more sense if they had something, anything to hold on to. I mean, if the LA Galaxy have, for instance, let's say, you know, the Argentinian national team was in D.C. recently training. So if D.C. United tweets something about Lionel Messi, D.C. United has been around for 20 years. They've established their brand. You know them. You know their team. They've won championships in the past. And they tweet about Messi, you know, his stats or something. They tweet, somebody took a picture with Messi, isn't this cool? Completely fine. There's absolutely no problem with that because you know D.C. United. You know, you know, they've planted their flag in the ground. You know what they're about. A couple tweets about Messi, they'll disappear into the ether in 2 days. You forget all about them. LAFC is, I mean, I say this not disparagingly, but they're nothing right now.
Yes, so, right. They are. They're nothing. They're a black hole. They're a black hole of soccer.
They are. And so to attach yourself to these tweets, this is literally all of the public presence your entire franchise has. And you have to be careful with how you use that publicity in the early days. And so to tweet something, a picture out in November, like literally 2 weeks after you've had your announcement that you exist as a club, to say, check out Lionel Messi's career stats, it makes zero sense, and it makes you look amateur. Like there's a college intern running your Twitter
feed. Which is probably the case. I mean, if you don't have a structure involved, and I don't know where they are in putting their team together, but if you don't have a structure involved, and social media is sort of like down the list of things you got to get done, maybe they have handled it. I don't know. Again, as you said, it's their only public persona, so wouldn't that be important? I don't know. I hope they get things together. I hope there's a stadium deal that gets done, and that sort of coalesces all of these elements, and they figure out a plan. Will, what's the timeline? How quickly do you think they need to figure out how to start positioning themselves? Because it's not even really about the Galaxy. It's just trying to figure out a niche within a very crowded sports market, especially in LA, where there's a lot of competition for eyeballs and hearts.
Well, I think the first thing that they should have done, Tom Penn is their owner, has talked about this in the past about being difficult, and I understand that, but I think that they should have come in to MLS with a plan immediately to absorb Chivas USA's academy.
Yes.
And to use that in the 2015-2016 development academy season. Because Chivas USA, for the train wreck that the senior team was, their academy is one of the best in the country, and it still is. I mean, they have a ton of quality kids in that academy, and they face kind of an uncertain future right now. And LAFC can make a very compelling case to MLS, which owns Chivas USA right now, which owns that academy, to say, we'll assume command for all these kids, for U16, U14, U20, or U18 team, and we'll start play under LAFC banner in 2015, 2016. And, Development Academy's already announced its new teams for the next season, so I'm not sure that that's even possible at this point. So I think they may have missed an opportunity there. And, New York City FC waited, in my opinion, too long to establish a Development Academy team. That's something very easy that you can do to start sort of planting your flag in the ground for that community to say, we care about your kids. We care about development. We're in this community for the long haul. And they haven't done that yet. It's a very easy thing to do.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what's happening on the ground, but I think you've identified something that's pretty basic is you should be making yourself known around LA as a soccer entity, whether that's, we're a future club, or whether that's part of the youth structure and a community, and whether or not you're pitching, you have a tent out at a tournament. I mean, that just do that kind of stuff. Hopefully they are. I don't know that they're not, Will, and I don't want to throw stones if we're being unfair here. But Washington's got a question on Twitter. I'm going to throw this at you before we move on, because I don't want this to be all about LAFC. He says, if LAFC weren't being so confusing, would you be talking about them right now?
That's a good point. I mean, probably not. We're not talking about Atlanta, are we?
No, we're not. And Atlanta's probably doing a lot of good things right now that we're not talking about.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a good point. But at the same time, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right?
I suppose that's exactly what this is. And we are always, our eyes are always drawn, especially in, and this goes back, I haven't mentioned it today on the show, but Simon Evans wrote an excellent column over at World Soccer Talk in which he sort of identified that American soccer is more concerned with the structures and how we do things than sometimes we are about the games and the coaches and the players and the referees, as is the rest of the world. And there's a reason for that, but that's why our attention is drawn to LAFC, because it's a chain, and the weakest link is the one that we worry about most. And when LAFC isn't really getting themselves together in a way that we all think is the right way to go, we pay attention to them. All right. I don't have a whole lot of time with you, Will. I want to run through a couple of other things. The thing about Top Drawer Soccer is you guys do a lot of discussing development. You particularly have dived into some of the issues affecting MLS and the way they develop players. And there's some names I just want to get your thoughts on. I'm going to throw some names at you. You tell me where you think they are, whether it's future national teamer or future MLS star, or what their situation is right now. The first one is Tommy Thompson. Where is Tommy Thompson?
Well, yeah. I think Dom Kinnear, to start with, was a bad mix with him. The new San Jose coach. He's a little bit more pragmatic. If you look at the way he deployed in Houston, he's a little bit more of an old school 4-4-2 kind of guy. You know, have a blazing winger out on the out on the fringes and funnel it in. And Sana Niasse's been that for him on the right wing this year, which is a bit puzzling because Sana Niasse has not been very good. And I don't know if Dom Kinnear watched the U-20 CONCACAF tournament in January, where Tommy Thompson was, in my opinion, one of the top two or three players in that entire tournament, but he played out wide, and it was a 4-3-3, so we admit that right off the bat. But at the same time, as a guy who likes to collapse the wing, Tommy Thompson is outstanding, especially when you have a guy like Wando, who's not going to stay tethered to the box and likes to kind of pull back a little bit. There's so much good interchange that could happen there, and he's getting zero chance to showcase his ability. So, I mean, I can't tell you what's going through Dom's mind. Maybe there's something that he sees in practice that just doesn't jive with sort of the ethos that he wants to install. But there's absolutely no reason that at the very least he comes in for 20, 30 minutes at the end of games. It gives you a little interjection.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely a role he could fill. And I don't know why. Maybe Dom's just getting himself established and wants to rely on, again, Sana Niasse. I mean, seriously. I mean, we're talking about a nondescript MLS player at this point. But before I move on from Tommy Thompson, is there anything left for him to gain from going down and playing with the Sacramento Republic at this point, or is that ship has sailed? He needs to be in a top level environment.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, he's good enough, and if San Jose is not the place for him, he needs to find something
different player, but certainly one who is exciting on the creative end as much as Tommy Thompson, a guy who's making a name for himself is Harry Shipp. Is Harry Shipp, how does Harry Shipp, I guess the question for me now is, because I honestly think he's fun to watch. I think he's made great strides. Obviously, he hit a wall last year in his rookie season. Maybe he overcomes that this year. But if he was to become a national team player, if Jurgen Klinsmann's taking a look at Harry Shipp, which I think a lot of people would love for him to do, how does he fit into that team?
What I hope that Klinsmann sees in Shipp's deployment in Chicago is that he's kind of become this WD-40 in Chicago, where he just kind of goes in where they need him, and he's been outstanding in literally every position he's played. He plays, I believe, on the right now, just because that's where they have the biggest hole. And he's been playing outstanding, but you know, his passing numbers haven't been, for as many chances as he creates, his percentage, passing percentage is usually, it hovers between 70, 75. And he's an 80 to 85% passing kind of guy. And that's entirely because he's on the wing. So if you move him inside as kind of more of an eight, where he's shuttling in between the defensive midfielder and the high attacking midfielder, which I guess the U.S. needs to find as well. But, if he's in that sort of conduit position, there isn't anybody quite like him. I mean, he's getting these Cuauhtemoc Blanco comparisons right now in Chicago, and you know, I think that there's some hyperbole to that, but there's also a little bit of truth, just because he kind of has that sort of Mexican technician kind of look about his game. He's shorter, he loves being on the ball, he takes fantastic touches. Mm-hmm. So I would like to see him sort of in that sort of shuttler role in the middle, where he can really kind of do some work.
He does have this sort of jittery approach to the ball that is mm-hmm. very Blanco, that I definitely enjoy. Every time I watch him, he reminds me of somebody, and I think Blanco, but then I'm like, there's got to be somebody else I'm thinking of. But regardless, Harry Shipp, very fun to watch. I'm going to come to one more name people know, and a name that I know you, a player you like very, very much, and then I'm going to ask you about maybe some guys to keep an eye on. Will Trapp. Give me some thoughts on Will Trapp in 2015. Obviously, some injury concerns right now.
Yeah, for sure. I think the injuries have slowed him down a little bit. And I hope that national team fans aren't cowed by his one appearance, where he was a little bit, behind the game, in a national team jersey. But, you know, the thing that really excites you about Will Trapp is that he's willing to stay back, certainly, but he's got this ability, this distribution ability, that I haven't seen outside Michael Bradley, ever on the national team level. So I think that one of the things that's really exciting about him is if you put him with Bradley, you've immediately got a midfield that can pick out a pass and pick out a forward pretty much anywhere on the field. And for Jurgen Klinsmann's style of play, which in my opinion, as much as he talks about playing through the back and playing this, this beautiful style is a little bit more direct, than maybe he's let on. Having basically two registas with the ability to cut out passes, is about as good as it gets.
Yeah.
Now that said, you know, he does have some things to learn just about tracking runners. He's not the greatest out and out defensive midfielder. So you may, pairing him with Bradley may or may not be the greatest idea, but at the same time, I think in terms of his vision, and his ability to read a game just to see what's happening, there's not a whole lot better right now.
All right. And I didn't prep you for this. So if you don't have anybody off the top of your head, you know, feel free to yell at me here, but do you have anybody, anybody in the, you know, the homegrown range, a young player, maybe even a rookie out of college who has not yet really made himself known, but you think has the talent to really step up into a level where Trapp is existing right now?
Well, putting me on the spot here.
I know. I know. It's completely unfair of me.
No. Oh, I mean, there's a ton of really solid players. You know, maybe the one that I'm most excited about is a kid out of Houston. His name's Christian Lucatero.
Okay.
and he is a legitimate number 10, a creative midfielder, scores a ton of goals, and he just recently committed to Oregon State.
Yes.
He's in the Dynamo system, and he's got Mexican heritage. So the Mexican national team's kind of poking around and gauging his interest. I think he's recently called into a Mexican U-17 national team camp. And for some reason, you know, the Dynamo have been very reluctant to sign homegrowns, and this kid is MLS ready right now. And if, you know, Owen Coyle needs some advice, he can call me up, because if this kid even gets to Oregon State before he signs a homegrown deal, that's a problem.
Well, I just to jump in, Will, I'm not usually going to tread on your territory, but I've talked to this kid. I actually interviewed him for a piece I did for Bleacher Report that they asked me to do, specifically about his U.S. and Mexico roots and maybe picking. But as you said, if he gets to Oregon State and the Dynamo haven't signed him, I think my fear is, particularly because Mexico is taking a look, that he's going to end up playing for a Mexican club before we know what's happening.
Sure. And that's it's the same thing for the national team. With a lot of these kids that are, you know, under 18, under 20, it's kind of about who gets there first and who kind of is able to instill this ability of, or this sort of thought of belonging. And if he feels like he belongs in one place over the other, that's where he's going to play. And he hasn't really, you know, he's gotten some call ups, certainly in the U.S. camps, but, he hasn't really been an integral part of any national team. So, it's very wide open. I mean, he can go either way in terms of, Mexican clubs or, Mexican national team. So who knows, but at least in terms of the Dynamo, he's one of these no-brainer guys.
Here's a player who passed on signing with MLS and decided to go the NASL route, and I've heard a couple of theories as to why this might be, but Haji Wright is a New York Cosmos player at the moment, highly touted, U-17 international. What is the ceiling for Haji Wright, and what do you think he gets out of the Cosmos relationship?
Yeah, I mean, Haji is obviously very, he's a very interesting prospect because he's got every physical tool that you could want. I mean, he's played mostly in a 4-3-3 on the national team, but you know, he's played wide left, he's played wide right, he's played up top, and he could do all those things. I think one of the things that you want to see from him is him continue to work on his work rate, because he can tend to give up on plays. He's not great on 50-50 balls, but you know, man, you get him in space and he's hard to beat. And I think His ceiling is going to depend a lot on the type of instruction that he gets in the national team, or on the club level. And, you know, surrounded by guys like Marcus Senna and Raul with the Cosmos, I think can be good. My worry is competition. I don't know how, you know, how stiff that's going to be. You know, NASL is not a terrible league, but at the same time, he's not quite playing in the Bundesliga either. So, I mean, I think that for a guy like him, he just needs minutes at this point. So I'm certainly not deriding his move to the Cosmos. Mm-hmm. I think he wasn't going to get those minutes at the Galaxy where where he's a homegrown prospect. So I'll be interested to see though if he parlays this into a move to Europe, because he was in Germany before this with Schalke on an extended trial for a while and didn't work out. He didn't have an EU passport and he wasn't 18, so he couldn't sign. Well, he turns 18 next year. So when that happens, I don't know. Maybe he decides to jump, or maybe they sell him or something like that happens. But in the interim, it's a good spot. He's getting minutes. That's kind of all you can ask.
Now let me turn to the national team program for just a second before we let you go, Will. It's it's been a little bit up and down. Obviously, Klinsmann has got this holistic approach to how to leading the entirety of U.S. soccer, certainly from the men's side. He's got a mandate as technical director to make changes and doing everything. We obviously have coaches who have been given a certain task with these teams that are they're all operating under the same umbrella now. Tab Ramos with the U-20s and Richie Williams down a level below that. How would you rate things right now? And maybe I'll specifically ask you about those individual coaches, Ramos and Williams, and how they're doing.
Well, I think the system certainly needs a little bit of work. But, if you judge teams on results only, which we don't do, but let's say we do, then, the U-20s need U-17s who are both in World Cups later this year, that's all you can ask, I guess, where they have the opportunity to play in these bigger games against the heaviest competition possible. Now, that said, both U-17s and the U-20s this year needed a playoff game to qualify. Both were in really dire straits late. The U-17s utterly collapsed. After a really promising first three games, and just kind of shuffled through the last couple, and had to win a do or die game to get there. Now the U-20s was even more dire. I mean, they drew their first game, which to be fair was off of a wonder strike from Guatemala, and then, totally laid down against Panama. There's some concerns on the way these teams are playing. There's not a whole lot of fluid interchange, the way these teams are built. Tab Ramos, I think, has done a fine job. He's put in a tough spot before the 2013 U-20 World Cup, where half the roster weren't necessarily his players that he brought up. That World Cup was just an absurd draw, where you had Ghana and Spain and France, which eventually ended up winning the whole tournament. So it was hard to judge. And I think this year, 2015, will be a benchmark in how we view both Richie Williams and Tab Ramos, because Richie Williams, this is his first World Cup. His team missed the last one, which was the first time that had ever happened in the history of the U-17 national team. So, we're starting with that, and we're saying, okay, Richie, well, you've got 2015 to figure it out, and they've got their World Cup later this year, and we'll see how they do. Same thing with Tab. I mean, certainly he made his first World Cup, but at the same time, it's not like his team has been a world beater either. So, both of those World Cups, the U-20s play at the end of May, and the U-17s play, I believe, in October. And I think how they look in those tournaments will be a barometer for how we look at both of those guys in the years to come.
We could do this for an hour, Will, but yes. I know you've got stuff. You're moving stuff around your new house out there in the Pacific Northwest, and we got stuff to do. I mean, life goes on. I would love to just sit here and chat soccer with you. Hopefully, we'll have you back in the near future. Will Parchman. Follow him on Twitter at Will Parchman, writing over at Top Drawer Soccer, doing fantastic work with that crew. Will, thank you very much for your time and your insight, man. Get you back
Cheers,
soon.
Cheers, my man.
All right, there you go, Will Parchman. And that's going to do it for us on a Friday. Make sure you go to 3nilfc.com to buy your Soccer Morning t-shirt. You can get your mug at backheel.com/store. We're on Twitter at Soccer Morning. I don't know, what else? Keep coming with those U.S. Open Cup thoughts. I like that. At Soccer Morning on Twitter. Have a good weekend. Enjoy your soccer. We'll talk to you guys on Monday. See ya.